More than 500,000 Russians were granted visas to the European Union's Schengen zone in 2024, nearly half of which allow for multiple entry over several years. The visitor numbers were down by about 90% compared with the pre-pandemic 2019, but still, 500,000 people isn't nothing. And it's about to seem astronomical, following a recent decision by the European Union to introduce a ban on multiple entry visas to the Schengen zone for Russian citizens. These particular visas were already pretty hard for Russian nationals to obtain, and some EU countries, such as Poland and Finland, had already banned entry to all Russian nationals who don't have residence permits. Individual countries in the Schengen free movement zone have leeway to interpret the new rules, but even Hungary, the land of Viktor Orban and probably Moscow's closest ally in all the zone, has stopped issuing multiple entry visas for Russians. Many have welcomed the EU's new policy as long overdue, justifying the restrictions as a common sense security measure and a morally righteous punishment for the citizens of a state terrorizing the continent and making war in Ukraine. That has not been the response from most Russian activists and journalists, however. For these people, Europe's new multiple entry visa policy will shatter the workflows and evacuation plans that had made it possible to continue limited forms of independent reporting and activism inside Russia. To learn more about these repercussions, I spoke to journalist and activist Yelena Kostuchenko. Welcome to the Naked Pravda. Howdy, folks. I'm your host, Kevin Rothrock. Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, I interviewed award-winning Russian journalist and activist Yelena Kostuchenko, the author of the 2023 book, I Love Russia, Reporting from a Lost Country. I don't know if I'm reading that with the right intonation, but there you have it. She's also a longtime correspondent for Novaya Gazeta. Earlier this week, Kostuchenko posted a viral social media testimonial criticizing the EU's decision to withhold multiple entry visas for Russians, except in limited cases where an applicant can demonstrate their dissident or activist credentials. Kostuchenko's sister is still in Russia, still working as an investigative journalist, and a multiple entry visa was a lifeline that made her work feasible. Yelena agreed to talk to me for this show. My first question was about this social media post. And she was quick to point out that Russians who risk their safety while leaning on European multiple entry visas are also busy documenting and investigating ongoing Russian war crimes against Ukrainians under occupation. So, you know, I reached out to you because I saw your Facebook post, obviously, in response to this new EU multi-entry visa policy. And the probably the main question I wanted to ask you specifically to explain the relevance of a multi-entry visa to people in your line of work, because I think a lot of people will hear the term multi-entry visa, and probably a lot of Americans wouldn't even know what that is, because it's just not something that's part of our daily lives. But it sounds, there's something about it that sounds like a luxury. It's something like, oh, you're a fancy tourist. Multi-entry means you can just come and go as you please, go shopping, go skiing in the Alps or something. You wrote in your, you know, very personal social media post about your sister, who's an investigative journalist still based in Russia, and how newsrooms and various organizations operating abroad sort of need these multi-entry visas to coordinate with staff who are still inside Russia. Can you explain for listeners what's so important about multiple entry visas, specifically this like concept of multiple entry, being able to come and go? Like, why does that matter so much?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking this question. Whew. I feel really angry with EU authorities now because of their decision, because they obviously didn't consider the civic Russian society living in Russia, working inside Russia, and who's experiencing lots of dangers like on daily basis. And yes, one of them is my sister, who's like investigative journalist based in Moscow. I believe the whole buzz is about the name of these visas. They call just touristic, like Schengen multi-entry visa. But they're not being used as touristic visas at all. If we could rename them, I would say as like coordination visas or evacuation visas. The thing is, we still have a lot of people inside Russia. I don't know the exact number, and nobody does, thanks God, but we're talking about thousands. So those people, they do work inside fascistic regime, where it's very different work. From collecting and providing proofed information, what's going on in Russia, what Russians are thinking and feeling, what do we hope, what do we fear, what goes on with our politics, right? What goes on front line. But we also have people who evacuate Ukrainian civilians from occupied territories of Ukraine. And we have volunteer Nadine Geisler, just 27 years old woman who got 22 years in prison for this work. We have people inside Russia who's identifying Ukrainian children who was unlawfully transferred to Russia and now being held up there. And right now we have 339 names of these kids. And we know these names because of the work of people with Russian citizenship who still work inside Russia. We have at least 5,000, but Ukrainian authorities are claiming that it's actually 16,000 of Ukrainian civilians who was unlawfully detained by Russia. I would say they were kidnapped and they've been tortured and they've been held in Russian prison system without even being registered in that system. So to find out who these people are, to learn about their names and their locations, it's a tough job. Right now, we know 1,700 names of them. It's not enough, but it's ongoing work. And we also have Russian political prisoners, which also we have 1,500 names of them. But according to people who also work inside the system, it's close to 8,000. And we also have a lot of grassroots projects and initiatives supporting LGBTQ people in Russia or supporting Russian soldiers who want to desert, who doesn't want to kill Ukrainians, or who doesn't want to get killed themselves. And we have like many projects like that. We don't talk about it usually openly because we have enormous scale of repression in Russia right now. And publicity really raises risks here. But all these people, just to make it clear for all who listen to us today, all these people are in imminent danger of being arrested or murdered. And we know that. Each of them knows that. But we also have hope that before the state comes to arrest or kill them, there will be like a sign, like call from stores, search of their home, like they've been put in foreign agent list, like I was put in foreign agent list today. Yeah, like it's like the first sign. So, and they hope that there will be a few minutes or hours or days after the sign to get out to a safe country instead of a prison grave. Because when you're alive and when you're free, you still can continue to work. Right now, we have kind of a unique system being established. We have people who live in exile and who've been able to support and coordinate and help out in every need the people who are still in Russia. So both parts are essential.
Is Europe the only place that people can go in this situation? Like, is there nowhere, are there no visa-free countries that Russians can travel to where they can have the sort of safety they can expect in Europe?
There are three, if you have Russian passports, there are a certain number of countries you can enter without visa. Unfortunately, all of these countries are willing to extradite the person on the request of Russian authorities. Even if there is no official agreement on extradition, is happening. Like yesterday, there were reports about several people were extradited from Turkey, and it was done without any legal proceedings. So they just basically got caught by Turkish secret services and got, you know, deported to Russia there. Like, Russian secret services made the plane. So, yeah, unfortunately, European Union is like the closest possible location and the safest possible location for Russian activists, journalists, human rights defenders, lawyers, politicians, activists, volunteers. This is like the place these people can continue their work safely, or at least more safe than in Russia.
Right, right.
And the thing is that this window of opportunities I just mentioned, like, you know, the several minutes, days, you know, sometimes a week, it's not long enough to obtain a single entry Schengen visa. Because right now it takes at least 2 weeks if you're applying from Russia to obtain this visa. So that's why it's so important to have this visa already issued and, you know, glued into your passport so you can use it any moment. And this visa needs to be active. It's like the definition of multi-entrance visa. Yeah, like the state issues a visa which says like it works for a year and any time of this year you can enter European Union. It's what we're aiming for. The thing is that even before that decision, multi-entry visas were an issue. And me and many of people I know, we're advocating for issuing more visas for activists, journalists, human rights defenders. Because, you know, right now it's like a tough choice. Like, if you cannot obtain a visa, if you cannot increase your chances to flee, you're kind of facing the choice. Shall you leave in advance and stop your work and be safe? Or you can stay and continue knowing there is no real chance to rescue.
Right.
The thing is that, as I said, European Union didn't issue these visas that much anyway. Like my family, for example, when they visited me in Europe, they didn't have these visas. They didn't. They weren't granted with these visas. So I don't think that, I obviously don't have statistics, but I don't think it was such a big problem. But it became such a big problem since the European Union proclaimed that Schengen multi-entry visa will not be issued to Russian citizens unless they're human rights defenders, journalists, activists, volunteers, and so on and so on. So now what we really achieved with this measure, that our FSB, like our Secret Service people who work on duty in every single border checkpoint, they know that if this person who's aiming to cross the border having Schengen multi-entry visa in their passport, they work against the state. And they will use this information. It's what I'm trying to deliver to European Union authorities. Please don't help our authorities to repress people who do essential work.
Sorry to butt in like this, but I'd like ever so humbly to encourage listeners to sign up for Medusa's daily newsletter. I write it every weekday, except on major holidays, or if I'm, I don't know, deathly ill. And what it is a daily delivery of some unique story, condensing an interview, reviewing an article, or analyzing some trend related to Russia and the surrounding region. I keep it snappy and brief, so you can stay informed, curious, and get on with your day. Sign up at medusa.io/en/pages/newsletter. We probably need a shorter URL than that, but for now, that's what you get. Thank you. You're welcome. What do you say to people whose attitude is the reason Putin hasn't been overthrown is because all the good Russians, I'm paraphrasing, all the good Russians, all the dissidents have been allowed into Europe. And so Russia doesn't have the necessary civil society. And if they're forced to stay, then Putin will face more societal pressure.
I don't like good Russian term. There are not like good Russians.
I'm putting it
Russians.
In scare quotes. Are... Yes, yes.
Yeah, I know, but let's just say that there are different Russian people as there are different American people and different European people who do different stuff. Some of them committing crimes, some of them participating in war, and some of them trying to stop this war and trying to save as many people as they can. I do realize that we can be called ineffective, but I don't see any effectiveness on the side of European Union or America now as well. But I know that no matter what way, how we see the future, they do need to have people inside country who sees the future of Russia differently. Russia won't disappear. It won't disappear. You need to, like, it's located in the heart of Eurasia. It's a really large country, 140 million people only officially, non-officially probably close to 150 million. Those people are going to be your neighbors anyway. And unless you have a brilliant plan, which doesn't need any information from inside the country, any collaboration from inside the country, any dialogue with people who believe that Russia shouldn't be fascist state, but should be democratic, prosperous country, there like every person is welcome. Unless you don't have this brilliant plan, and it doesn't seem like that for almost 4 years of this insane war, someone came up with this brilliant plan. You need these people safe and active. And this decision of European Union, it's not like the first decision that hurts this community. I mean, the other measure, I believe it was like a few months ago, there was another sanction introduced that cars with Russian number plates shouldn't enter European Union space. You know, it's not like Putin's seeing news on these sanctions like, shit, I want to have a road trip to Paris this weekend, you know, with some chicks, and it's not going to work out. Probably I'm supposed to stop the war. No, but all evacuation system of people, of Russian soldiers who want to desert, of Ukrainian civilians kidnapped and sent to Russia, or people who are struggling with criminal prosecution from Russian state, to Ukrainian refugees who fled from war to Russia and now try to leave Russia. All these systems of evacuation worked because Russian cars with Russian plates could enter European Union. Now all these systems are active again. Obviously, people found some, you know, side routes. But what wrong would be to advise the Russian civil society before apply a new sanction? We do have some think tanks. We do have some experts who are willing to maintain dialogue between Russian society inside Russia and European officials. And like, I know these people work a lot, but it doesn't seem like anybody actually hearing them, you know? And that's sad.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've been talking about like how these sanctions and how the visa restrictions will affect the lives of these activists, journalists, and so on that rely on Europe as a kind of safe haven in an emergency and so on, and about like how it affects the officials who can easily circumvent this. But what about like just like middle-class Russians who are going on vacation? Because a lot of the like commentary I see is columnists who are like talking about, oh, I was skiing in the Alps, or I was at a cafe in Paris and I heard someone speaking Russian, and that's so upsetting. And obviously, that doesn't mean that this is a Russian citizen. So they're jumping to conclusions there, certainly. But the concept of how dare the Russian middle class get to live, get to enjoy a European holiday. Is there anything to the argument that the middle class, or like the, not necessarily like Putin's entourage, but like just like fairly affluent Russians who are able to vacation in Europe, and like they, you know, the, there were like more than 200,000 multi-entry visas granted in 2024, apparently. That's what The Economist reported. It's way down from pre-pandemic, but a large number of people, most of them presumably not activists or Putin elites and so on. So, like, is there anything to the argument of, well, let's punish the Russian middle class?
First of all, this multi-entry visas ban affects not just civil society inside Russia who does all the job. It affects, for example, every single independent Russian media I know, because most of independent Russian medias right now are in exile because journalism is being criminalized in my country since the beginning of this insane war. And I mean, I thought it's quite obvious that none of exiled media is able to fully operate without people inside Russia, without correspondents inside Russia, without sources inside Russia, right? I mean, we do realize it. And if we gonna, you know, at least try to beat Russian propaganda, which is so well-founded, so well-organized, and so talented in many ways, we need to, you know, create a different information, like objective information, verified information, trusted information to share with Russian population, right? I mean, if we still want to do it, right? Do we want to do it, or do we want all Russians to believe Putin? This is the question. About those Russians who traveling to Alps and enjoying the weather and nice cheese up there, well, first, I don't know those people, so I can't talk about them. Probably there were some Russians who, in the middle of war and economical struggle, are willing to travel to Alps for vacation, and they have money for that. And somehow we have multi-Schengen visa, which, as I said, like my family doesn't have, right? They're not good enough to get this visa. So I say, what about the latest visit of Valentina Matviyenko to Geneva? Like with Stutsky and some other people who were like directly under the sanctions because they're supporting this war. Like what Matviyenko herself, like her signature is in the document allowing Putin to start this war. And then she wants to travel to Geneva to Female Women's Initiative Forum.
Earlier this year, in July 2025, despite being under international sanctions, Russian Federal Council Speaker Valentina Matviyenko traveled to Switzerland to attend a global parliamentary summit, where she used the platform to repeat various Kremlin talking points about the war in Ukraine. Switzerland's Federal Department of Foreign Affairs said it was obligated to facilitate travel by official delegates participating in events hosted by international organizations.
Somehow those sanctions got temporarily removed, so Matviyenko can walk on the beautiful lake, you know, and probably travel to mountains, you know, to Alps, you know, to eat some grilled cheese. Yeah? How does that work this way, right? I'm just asking. I mean,
yeah.
She, like, her trip became, you know, possible. And it's like the same authorities who made this trip possible for her, who made impossible to flee for my sister. Or latest visit Putin to America, you know, Alaska, red carpet, all the stuff. I mean, the guys were criminal. International Criminal Court issued an arrest order for him. But still, you know, if two big guys need to talk, there is always room for that. So I think that it would be really nice to think more about people who actually trying to stop this war. You know, and I'm not asking for help to these people. I'm asking not to damage their lives and destroy their chances to continue this war.
I just have one last question. It's about the safety and security argument that a lot of Europeans raise when justifying or trying to justify the new multi-entry visa policy. The argument that they have that their multi-entry visas are too loose in terms of security, and that single entry visas are the better way to sort of monitor who's being let in from Russia. And one thing that comes to mind is there have been sort of reports of penetration of the exiled opposition by the FSB, for instance. Like there was a couple in Poland last year that was arrested on espionage charges. This is Igor Bragov, I think is his name. Next month, in December 2025, a 30-year-old Russian opposition activist named Igor Rogov, I think I just said the name Bragov, but it's Rogov. I am very bad with the stress in Russian surnames. I apologize, everyone. But anyway, Igor Rogov will go on trial in Poland for espionage, for working with Russia's Federal Security Service, the FSB, to collect sensitive information about Polish officials, university lecturers, and other exiled Russian dissidents. He's also been charged with aiding Russia's scheme to ship liquid explosives across Europe and assisting with other sabotage efforts. Igor Rogov arrived in Poland in 2022 as a political refugee. If convicted, both he and his wife face sentences ranging from 8 years in prison to life. And that case and others like it, they sort of raise the question of like, well, the opposition is ostensibly anti-Putin. They're ostensibly like our one window into the Putin regime that we rely on desperately to understand Russia. However, if this is like a vulnerable point for where they can be pressured into doing bad things once they're in Europe, how does that affect, in your mind, like the calculus that European policymakers should be using?
Obviously, it sucks. I mean, me, myself, I most likely survived an assassination attempt in Berlin like 3 years ago now. Yeah, 3 years ago. Didn't like it. Like zero stars, don't recommend to anyone. And when German police and General Prosecutor's Office of Germany started the investigation, I met with many officers who openly told me that Russian Secret Service agents are very active in Europe since the full-scale invasion.
At the start of the full-scale war, Novaya Gazeta special correspondent Yelena Kostichenko went to Ukraine, where she wrote four stories in March 2022. On March 30th, Kostichenko was in Zaporizhia and was planning to travel to occupied Mariupol when she received a warning from some colleagues and Ukrainian intelligence sources that Chechen units at Russian checkpoints had been ordered to kill her if they saw her. She then left Ukraine. Months later, in mid-October, Kostichenko was likely poisoned in Munich. After a strange-tasting meal, she started suffering an array of health issues that she initially mistook for COVID-19 after effects. German doctors later referred her to the same hospital that had treated Alexei Navalny after he was poisoned with the nerve agent Novichok. Too much time had passed between Kostichenko's likely exposure to the toxin and the tests, but physicians and poison experts have said that her symptoms, which included severe liver and kidney damage and multiple neurological abnormalities, these symptoms point to a poison that entered her body through food or her skin.
I mean, they were active before. Yeah, we all know about like Litvinenko assassination and, you know, Skripali assassination attempt and so many other things. But now they are like super active and they are multiplying. But consider the cases we already know about, like those people who already got arrested for that, for like diversions, assassination attempts, assassination, kidnapping, gathering information, blowing up some military, whatever. Those people, they don't request Schengen multi-entrance visa. they usually have foreign passports and they usually don't identify themselves as Russians officially. So it's not like FSB agents are standing in a line to European embassy to, you know, apply for visas. It works differently. I believe that it's my, like, honest opinion and might be very unjust here. And please excuse me if I will be, because, like, as I said, like, I had personal experience and it took me almost 3 years to fully recover from it. And I'm still struggling. I believe that Europe really should consider to improve their security. But as I'm aware, if you fight in a spy war, you do it by, you know, having more informants, paying more people, raising your staff in police and your secret services, giving them budget for real work and for real protection they could offer to the people who possibly will be targeted by Russian secret services in Europe. Yeah, it's like complicated work. I'm not qualified to, you know, comment. But I believe, again, multi-entry visa shit, it's like the last effective measure in this fight.